It's Jamie here, welcoming you to another edition of Movie Moan, your TMT podcast. Joining me, as always, is Mr. Phil G, the British Gentleman Agent. Say hello, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello. Welcome to Movie Moan. Now with 50% more bad impressions, 75% more English swear words, and 100% more sex appeal. The bad impressions obviously come from Jamie, the bad swearing from me, and although Ed and Lou would like to think so, the sex appeal is coming from our special guest, back for more, Queen Christina. Hello, lady.
Hi. Hello, everybody.
And hi, sitting with us all the way in... wherever the hell he's from, I forget. Ed. Ed, Captain Ed, star of the Ed Hocken Show, braindeadradio.com. Captain Ed Hocken.
Hi, hello there. Thank you, Phil. It's good to be here once again. And also joining is the man from Ontario himself, Lou.
Long days and pleasant nights, fellow gunslingers, for the Dark Tower is on its way.
You are pumped about this. This made your week.
When I saw that, I just about had my ultimate geekgasm for
my
life.
Well, let's have it. Go into detail, sir. What happened this week?
Well, this is something that I don't know if you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think any other project is going to do, maybe Star Wars, but Lucas never got that off the ground. But we're looking at a movie TV series here, and once it was announced, I kind of sat back and thought, you know what? I can't believe that nobody else has never tried to do this with another project, because if this kind of works, this could be like a major mind maker for whoever can, you know, steamroll something like this. But, I mean, we're looking at a 7-book series, so obviously, even compared to Lord of the Rings, this franchise is so much more complex and has much a longer storyline than Lord of the Rings does. So to kick it off with a movie... and then to go into a TV series and then go back to a movie and then I assume another TV series and probably a movie again. That's just like blows my mind. And I think one of the big complaints people always have about these adaptations of epic series is, well, you know, you have to cut out so much. Lord of the Rings cut out Tom Bombadil, and we've had discussions about whether that's a good decision or not. But still, if you're a fan of the series, you would like to see stuff like that. And because it's these kind of epic stories have, you know, really big scenes, plus they have really intimate, close moments, and Dark Tower definitely falls into that category. So, you know, to be able to have the money to do, like, the big awesome scenes that are in the Dark Tower, plus to have those moments with Roland and his gang or quartet, if you're familiar with the books, just blows my mind. Like this, I mean, people are probably going to get sick of this before it's even launched. But
let me just chime in for a second. Now you said that. Now has this thing about it being a movie and a TV show, then a movie, then another show, which I assume these shows would be miniseries.
TV series.
That has this been locked down? Because this sounds very, very overly ambitious, and you could run into a problem where they may get
Ron
one
Howard
movie
and
off the ground.
Kiva Goldsman.
Yeah, it's locked down. It's
who
it's
said Akiva Goldsman? Who said
yeah,
that?
That's about to say, that's not a good sign right there.
Yeah, I mean, I much prefer the previous team that had it, the J.J. Abrams, Damon Lindelof team, but. You know, beggars can't be choosers. I just like to see this thing up on the screen, and if these guys are going to do it this way, I'm talking as a fanboy. I'm totally, you know, my heart is
no,
on my sleeve.
No, you're
on
a fan. One. You are a fan man, sir.
My heart is on That's my true. Sleeve on this project.
Now, Lou, do you think sleeve. this project is much more adaptable than, say, something like Dune, which is, you know, never really been able to been pulled off just because of how
absolutely.
Dense it is?
Absolutely, because all the... over 90% of the events in the book take place in recognizable worlds. There's some fantasy settings that would have to be done. But by and large, most of it just takes place in either like the Old West or desert or alternate versions of Earth. So
I bet Sam Elliott's in it.
Pardon
yeah.
Me? Who?
You think Sam Elliott?
Who? Sam Elliott? Who? Oh my God! Get off the show! You don't know who Sam Elliott is?
No, I know who he is. I didn't hear who he said.
I know. It's an old joke, Lou. Before your time, me and Jamie used to make this joke about Sam Elliott. Always playing a cowboy.
Sam Elliott is contractually obliged to have to play a cowboy, or at least he gets first offer in any movie. Like he has to play it. It's true.
He could play Roland's dad. Absolutely.
Who would now? Now, Lou. Now you're the fan of the group. Now.
Yes.
Who would you think of Roland, just off the top? Anybody.
Vigo,
there you go.
Is that that thing in the painting in Ghostbusters 2? Is that what you're talking about there?
Peter McNichol will co-star as well.
Command me, Lord!
Yeah, that's right. That's all people know him for. Oh, wait.
And I'm just curious to see if this is going to launch any other franchises down the same path. Because
well, okay, now what?
I think this is kind of the future.
Yeah, what other franchises are there, to be honest? I mean, the only other thing...
Yeah, that's what, true. Well, there's... Yeah, I know of Game of Thrones. George R. Martin's fantasy series is coming to HBO, but that's one that could have gone that route too. But
that's right.
What about that? There was once that someone had done a test to do a version of the Talisman, which is supposedly very, very.
That's right. With DreamWorks. Yeah.
Yeah. Talisman is it's two books now, and there's still another one to come out.
I heard the second book was horrible. Actually, the sequel. Yeah.
I loved it, but then again, I'm a fanboy, so...
Yeah, I never read Stephen King.
Yeah, the Black House, that's an awesome
Now, movie. When's the soonest this would hit, though, is my question. I mean, I don't think there's a target date. Is there?
No dates have been announced, but I can't see the first movie coming out until, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road. And the thing is, whoever they get from the movie, according to what they're... The story's running is they're locked in for the TV series as well.
Oh, they'd have to be. So that's why that would be my guess. They get an unknown or a working class.
Well, what if we already heard of Akiva Goldsmith is going to be working on the writing on this. What if they bring in Mick Garris? Will that turn you off on this project?
Yes, it would.
Okay. You know he's going to be. Why are we even kidding? God,
I hope not. But yeah, I mean, Mick has done some. His earlier adaptations of King stuff was not too bad, but his later stuff I was never a fan of. So, yeah. No, I don't like that at all. But the thing is, see, they're going to have to cast Roland. It's going to have to be cast at least twice because they're going to do a flashback where he's a teenager as well, and that would be like the third movie. So this is going
to
be a huge cast.
No, you don't have to do that. All you have to do is hire the actor, put a baseball cap on him, and then turn it backwards, and boom, he's a teenager. Like
No. You comb
cowboy
the hair
hats
forward.
Don't to look like baseball hats, though.
You comb the hair forward. It worked for John Hamm.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. He's Oh, my God, John Hamm is young. I had to get my John Hamm mention in for the week. So, moving on. You're upbeat about this, Lou.
Absolutely.
Okay, cool.
Make it so. Let's go.
Yes, sir. As commandeth by Lou.
Didn't know we were making it.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotta get to work.
Who's directing this thing? I don't know. One of us.
You are.
By the end, everybody on the planet's going to be involved.
Wicked.
Nice. Kind of like X-Men First Class. They're going to just cast everybody in order to make that goddamn release date.
This one's going to have polar bears with armor. I want to voice them. Let me do that job. I'll do that.
There's a talking monorail. You could do him.
Oh, cool!
Blaine the monorail.
Really?
And he likes jokes. Riddles, actually.
You're making this up, I'm guessing.
No, I'm not.
Oh my God.
Blaine the monorail.
Does the train talk, or does the rail
it's got a computer
monorail
in it, yeah.
He should be voiced by why Akiva Goldsman's involved.
He should be voiced by Conan O'Brien. I'm just going to say that.
Stephen King said that was be the one character he would like to play.
No.
Blaine's a riot. Blaine's a hoot. He's like Hal on steroids.
I can't help but think of the monorail episode on The Simpsons now. I'm just going to start quoting that episode.
Well, you probably wonder where they got the idea from.
Yeah. Ripping off Stephen King. Actually, I think the news – we're going to segue a little out of order here because I think the news of the week we're all excited about is the return of Roger Ebert on television. So, Phil, what happened this week?
Well, I actually, you know, I'm sorry that I've been lazy, but, you know, I did watch Wolverine this month, so I've been in a coma. But I read this today just a couple of hours ago, that, Roger Ebert is returning to television, to PBS, no less, to do a show. Now, it's not going to be exactly the format you'd think. It's not going to be the traditional balcony, two guys talking. I initially thought, is Roper coming back? It'd be the case. It's essentially kind of like Roger Ebert presents a movie critic show, and there's going to be several critics, none of which I'm familiar with, I'm afraid to say. Maybe you guys can fill me up on those guys who are going to be doing the movie reviews. Essentially, though, the point is, it's going to be called At the Movies, I believe, or it's going to have the Roger Ebert name. We're basically trying to get back to the spirit of those old shows, just get back to proper film discussion on television, like I've been talking about at the movies with the last two guys. I said that I believe there is a market for a show to discuss, just passionately talk about movies on air. If you get the right people and the right format, I believe people will watch it. I could be wrong, but we're certainly going to put that theory to the test with this, because it's on friggin' PBS, which you need a reason to watch shows on that, I imagine. So we'll see how this turns out. But
it's going to be online also, I believe. They're going to put it online.
Of course.
Yeah.
I will mention one of the critics I am familiar with is Elvis Mitchell. I know him from he has a show on public radio over here called The Treatment, which is about the business of Hollywood. And he was a guest on Ebert and Roper. I always thought he was a solid reviewer, nothing too outrageous.
No.
The dude's name is Elvis. So
that's what got him hired.
Anybody else on that show.
Yeah, I'm not aware of the other people. I mean, I'm disappointed that Roper's not back, but I believe he's committed to Stars now. He does. I follow his YouTube account, and he does reviews weekly, actually.
I guess the only person I would have wanted to see there is either A.O. Scott wasn't bad, but a personal favorite of mine is Nathan Rabin from the AV Club, and apparently he was on a show a few years ago that didn't take off.
Oh, really?
It was on AV.
Remember they had Hot Ticket with Leonard Maltin and someone else? Remember
that
show?
He even had the Hollywood Shootout with Peter Guber and Peter Bard. Yes, because I want to listen to film advice from Peter Guber, and it caused Sony to lose $1 billion.
And yeah, exactly. But I met Batman! You know, it's like, yes, and you also made Caddyshack, too.
I do like listening to him, though. He's enthusiastic. I do like listening to him.
Yeah,
but that's
Peter Bard is a walking anachronism if there ever was one. So.
I enjoy the show. I used to like the show on AMC just because, like, they did shoot the shit a little bit more than any other show about the entertainment industry. But, yeah, I mean, I agree. It's like, yeah, these aren't really the right guys who need to be talking about this. I mean...
Oh, that's right. It was AMC. My mistake.
No, it was AMC, and I think the show, it ended on that, and they moved it over to Stars now, apparently, which I've seen some of those episodes, and it's like, yeah, your AMC format was better. You know, you talk about whatever the issue was, have a guest star, and then talk some more. You know, simple. Not bad.
Right.
Christina, you're a busy lady. You've got business lunches all the time, you know, so you can't watch television all the time, but are you going to watch this?
I'll watch anything with Roger. I love him. I'll absolutely watch it. But the more that I hear about this and looking at the pictures of the set and all the people that are involved, it sort of feels like it's The View for the movie.
The View. Oh, my God.
Does anybody else get that?
Okay, get out. We're trying to be positive here, for God's sake.
I think the only reason you say that is because it's four people. I mean,
yeah.
There's no, and I'm sure they're going to rotate it. So
well,
it'll be like the Law and Order Criminal Intent of movie
That's
reviews.
What I was thinking. We were talking about this off air, and I saw that
Law and Order critics. Movie critics, you know, dun dun.
One week it'll be these two critics. It'll rotate back. Eventually, Jeff Goldblum will show up, and then the show will end.
It's Von Harry from Ain't It Cool News.
Michael Moriarty will make an appearance and go nuts.
Get into another bar fight, and...
Well, I'm sure you heard that story from a couple of years back about Sony actually inventing a fake movie critic.
They did. It was 10 years ago.
That's criminal. They need to be brought down. So just make a show about that, than fighting, you know, fake movie critics and studios that pull that crap. They're the only people who can bring those type of things to
you. Basically, you want to do a show kind of like the old SNL cartoon skit called Ex-Presidents, except it's called Ex-Critics, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well,
they all have superpowers, you know. That'd be awesome, dude. Critics activate, you know. Wonder. That'd be awesome.
I don't like where you're going with this, dude. You should tread very carefully with what you're about to say. What superpower does Roger Ebert have? Let's hear it. Come on. No, you don't, do you? You didn't think about that.
I can think of something, but it'd be very mean, and I love Roger Ebert, so I'm not going to say
mine.
God bless you, Roger. It would be, I mean, but no, it would be, it's, let's just see what happens. The fact is that they're trying, and that's great. I mean,
I'm excited. Yeah.
If there's a movie god out there, then this is going to be like a really great capstone.
Gotta watch it.
Its career.
Absolutely.
And that's not to say that he's out, of course, because he's still writing reviews, but I want to see him on this. I don't want my last memory of him on TV, even though it's a great memory, to be the video clip that Jamie showed me of him trying out his
new voice.
Recently created new voice, computer-generated voice.
Yeah.
Made by the Scots, apparently. Apparently it was crafted by Scotsmen. Not that
Scotty.
That means anything, but...
Scotty.
It's just...
So basically by Simon Pegg. Simon Pegg did it, is what you're basically
yeah,
saying.
Yeah, Simon Pegg did it, yeah. Well, I just want to say, like, I watched the... They have, like, they did a pilot, and they have, like, a seven-minute clip reel, I guess, on YouTube that you can watch. And the way, from what I'm seeing, it looks like Elvis Mitchell and Christy LeMire are going to be doing the movie reviews, and the other people involved are going to be... Doing
fighting
like specific,
crime.
Doing specific, you know, older type movies or extensions of what's going on the internet. So I think this is kind of like a mix of where the show was, and it's an evolution into embracing what's happening on the internet as well. So I'm pretty excited. So I'm pretty excited for this whole concept, and I think it's kind of cool that it's come full circle and it's going back to public television where it started. So I'm
37 years
I'm
ago.
Definitely two thumbs up for this. I want to see it. Let's do it.
Absolutely.
Nice. I agree. So anyway, what else happened this week? Not much else. Now, I keep bitching and harping about The Hobbit, and as you all know, I think is it Lou and me who have the argument? It's not so much Phil, it's Lou and I. Because, you know, Ian McKellen will always say something, everyone goes, "Really, Sir Ian?" Ah! And then I just sort of roll my eyes and go, "He said this before." Well, interesting story came out this week from, I think it was the UK tabloids, you know, those big...
You know, I want to pull you up on this, Jamie, because you took a right dig at our English newspapers this week in your initial
post,
which you had to retract later on. Tell us what you said.
I don't have the top... I don't have the article in front of me. I think
oh,
I did. That's
Jamie always
trashy.
Forgets when he says something wrong.
I say a lot of stupid shit, sir. Be fair to me.
No, actually, I am just joking. I mean,
of course.
Jamie's quite right. Often times our British newspapers do come up with absolute bullshit, especially when there's no news to talk about. And what they came up with was that Martin Freeman had been apparently offered the part of Bilbo Baggins. Look, anybody would have called bullshit on that. Why? Because
everyone did.
Let me jump in. Didn't I hear something where Martin Freeman had retired from acting? I heard that somewhere.
I don't remember that.
I mean, no, the whole point of fact is that he can't do The Hobbit at the moment because he's doing a
20
show
weeks.
On BBC.
Yeah, he's doing 20 weeks of photography on the next season of Sherlock, which I've never watched. And apparently, now Phil, you have to correct me on this, it's a big hit over in your neck of the woods. Is that correct?
I think it's done well. It's not exactly Doctor Who at the moment, but it's, well, let's face it, nothing else is Doctor Who really, but it's done well. You know, it's
done well. But they're doing a second season, and they're really, like, you know, they're going on all cylinders for the next one. So the story was that, yeah, he was offered The Hobbit, turned it down. Story came out the next day from Entertainment Weekly, who said, no, actually, that's true. He was offered The Hobbit. Strangely enough, they were telling the truth, and he had to turn down. However, they've sent a new offer to him, basically saying to basically let him do the 20 weeks on Sherlock and then let him do the year and a half on Hobbit shoot. I don't really follow Martin Freeman's work. I guess the first thing to ask is, could you guys see him as Bilbo? Would he be a good pick? Everyone really is enthusiastic about this choice. I don't have a say in that particular arena. What do you guys think?
I honestly do not think that he is a leading man. I'm sorry about this. Look, I love his work. I think he's done great, and he really has made the effort to distance himself to do other things since The Office, because it really can be this thing which drags you down. He's done a very good job.
The only time he ever had a leading role was in Hitchhikers.
That's right. Yeah. And
don't
that
remind
was,
me of that.
Yeah. That was one of those movies that apparently everyone thought the casting was spot on. Everything else wasn't. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Absolutely dead on. I mean, it had pretty much the perfect cast. I still don't know what John Malkovich was doing in that film. But that's just that's an issue with the writing. But yeah, it was perfectly cast. And he did okay. He did his job. But he's just not leading man material. It's one of these hard things I find to put into words about what makes a leading man, what makes you really get behind someone and make you say, you know, that guy's cool, You know, I want to be.
He's an everyman. It's an everyman. It goes back to Indiana Jones. He's an everyman. He gets his ass kicked just like we do. You know, when he, that's what I think. That's what it is.
But then again, Martin Freeman is an everyman. He's got that kind of quality. He just doesn't have.
Well, he needs to get his
charisma,
ass kicked.
I guess it's a harsh way of putting it, but I don't think he has the charisma or the magnetic personality or other such bullshit words to be a leading man. I just don't
there's
got to
be something appealing. And I mean, I never seen the original UK Office, but his character was that of the everyman. I don't know, how did he carry that show? It was all Ricky Gervais, wasn't it?
No. I mean, that was the great thing. If I'll just talk about The Office for 2 seconds here, great thing about the show was that if you just watched clips of it, you'd think it was about Ricky Gervais. If you actually watch the show, you just notice that it's very subtly all about his character and Lucy Davis. Character and it all blossoms wonderfully well, and you know it is his best work. I mean, he gives a really, really wonderfully understated performance that is beautifully done and really, really comes to a head in the finale in the Christmas special. He's the best thing in the last episode of it. I mean, he really, really comes to the forefront, and he's a great actor. I just. Well, anyway, what the hell are we talking about The Hobbit it's going to happen? Fuck this! We're wasting time!
If we do, I've said it before, you know, I don't think The Hobbit's going to happen. The soonest we're getting at this juncture is 2013. There's no way they can hit 2012 at this point. They've been dicking around too much with the financial problems. Now there's the spy class deal that they said is in the next couple of weeks is going to be approved by, or is going to have to be approved by the board over at MGM. But then you got to. There's still a lot of stuff that has to get done. You have to find out who's directing this thing. Which sadly, it looks like it's going to be Peter Jackson. And before Lovely Bones, I'd have been. Well, actually, no, it wouldn't have even been before Lovely Bones. I don't want Peter Jackson directing this. And it's just. No. It goes back to a quote he gave when they were finding the director at the end of 2007. He said, "Look, if I was going to direct this, we wouldn't be searching. I don't want to direct Hobbit. It's not my battle. Like, I'm done with Middle Earth as a director. I want to give it to someone else." And then for him to turn around and take over, and then his quotes about, "Well, I'll do it if I have to." Yeah, that's the guy you want directing The Hobbit. Yeah, exactly. No,
Christina,
I don't.
Christina, where do you stand on this? I don't think we've actually discussed The Hobbit with yourself. I mean, do you care? Do you think it's ever going to happen? All this stuff.
I honestly think that Ian McKellen will die before this movie gets made, and I'm not even joking around.
Sorry.
I'm seriously not even saying that to be funny. I really think that with all of this back and forth about who's directing it, who's going to be in it, blah 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 blah, just definitively tell me yes or no. Stop cop teasing. Just tell me, are you going to do it or not? And then we can have a discussion. Until then, I'm not even going to talk about it until I know definitively what they're going to do with this, because I'm tired of them going back and forth with this nonsense. It's absurd at this point.
They're not acting like a bunch of people who are ready to make a movie. Like,
exactly.
There's nothing to suggest they're getting ready to get this film going. You know, first, there's always these excuses and all these situations. When Del Toro left, that was my enthusiasm. My enthusiasm for the project went right to hell when he left, because I was like, wanted to see this guy do it.
Yeah, same here.
And everyone's saying, like, you know, Alfonso Cuarón and Sam Raimi and Neil Blomkamp. It's like, they're great choices, but they're not realistic choices, particularly Raimi. It's like he was the runner-up to get the part, and they chose Del Toro. Why would you turn around and go right back to Raimi like, "Hey, buddy, sorry about not giving you the jab." Like, they're not going to do that. People, come on. It certainly would be better than Spider-Man 4 or that Wizard of Oz prequel.
I still think we were better off that Del Toro went on to do other things. Far better off if he gets – whether he gets his Lovecraft thing off the ground or he does something, another original work, we're always better for that. So,
absolutely.
Isn't that the irony, though? He did The Hobbit for a number of reasons, and a lot of it was to get a lot of money and a lot of power so he could make At the Mountains of Madness. Falls apart. And he accomplished his purpose. It's like, you know, hey, Avatar had some good shit to come out of it after all. You know, I'd nod and I...
Wait, Jamie, say that again.
Moving on.
Oh, no, we've got it recorded. It's all over.
Good.
Delete.
Audio.
I'll just edit that part out.
Yeah.
No,
well,
but
if they wait long enough, then they can get Elijah Wood to play Bilbo and Viggo to play Gandalf.
Nice. That would be weird casting, wouldn't it? But Hobbit, whatever. Well, the other problem with Hobbit is that one last thing I'll say is they've wait, like, from a commercial standpoint, everyone is so like, oh, it's a sure thing to make money. You sure about that? I'm not.
No.
No, I mean, like, there was a certain period where you had, like, the Lord of the Rings trilogy was over. Everyone was happy with Return of the King, won all the awards, blah, blah, blah. Needed some cooling off period. Good. But then it was like, we're past the cooling off period, and we're waiting longer and longer and longer to the point where, oh, a Hobbit, whatever.
I don't know.
If it were coming out next Christmas, I'd be saying, yes, it's a sure thing. I would say that, because at that point, the momentum would still be behind it, because they've already filmed it at this point.
Right.
But now it's up in the air, I don't think anything.
I don't know. It's a classic story. I think they could release a Hobbit in 10 years or 20 years, it'll still do well.
Well, the whole idea, like, let's link it to the Rings. I mean, I agree. I mean, that's, if you can, let's do it. But, I mean, at this point...
A classic story, by definition, is timeless, so it could be told at any time. I mean, but, to link it back to the original three movies, or the Peter Jackson movies, sure. If you want to build off of that, but I still think they could release it at any time, and that's never going to be an issue.
I will eventually get a Hobbit movie. I just don't think this version's going to happen. I still don't. And if we do, the soonest is going to be 2013, and even that's going to slowly but surely chipping away.
Run, who knows? It might be a better thing that a whole brand new swack of people come in to do the Hobbit beyond the ones that are trying to do it right now, because they've already done Lord of the Rings. So
that's true.
Yeah.
That's very true. The only other this one actually breaks my heart is I mentioned Alfonso Cuarón a few minutes ago, actually like a minute ago, whatever. He's been working on a sci-fi space set project called Gravity for the past a while, basically about this space station. And something happens, and there's only one survivor or two survivors, and the lead is a female, and she's trying to get back to Earth as soon as possible to get back to her daughter before the satellite crashes onto Earth. I believe that's the story. If I'm wrong, correct me in the comment section.
Sounds exciting when you say it.
I know. It's my John Madden.
There's a thing in the storm in the space.
Like, what happens?
You have a career in voiceover work, Jamie.
Thank you. but, you know, it was supposed to film this summer. They made two offers to Angelina Jolie. She nixed them both times. There's a lot of issues about whether or not this movie's going to happen because it's very expensive, and there were some articles about how it's going to be a combination of live action and motion capture, heavily on that. And, of course, if you've seen Children of Men, like, there's going to be a lot long tracking shots with no cutaways. Very ambitious project. I can't wait to see it because I'm such a big fan of the director. But, you know, they can't secure their female lead, and Warner Brothers, the studio behind it, is understandably saying, we need someone who can secure asses and seats. I don't know if the subject matter of this movie it's going to get people to go regardless of who's starring.
You know what, Jamie, this sounds a lot, oddly enough, like now it's going to be Alfonso Cuarón's Sunshine.
Ooh, good point. Never thought of that.
The ending could be completely horrible, so...
Yeah, that's a very excellent point, Mr. Hawken. Thank you, sir.
I was thinking about this. I was thinking just for a second. You know, when I read about the description and about how they were looking for a female lead, for some bizarre reason, the first image that popped into my head was that fake Julia Roberts movie from Notting Hill.
Oh, my God.
Do you remember that? Which is in the white spacesuit? Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. I was thinking they should get Julia Roberts to do that for real with the red wig and stuff.
Holy shit, that is so dead. Oh, my God, I forgot about that. Yes. What was your character like? You know, what was your motivation? Oh, I didn't have much motivation. Why? Because I was a flesh-eating monster in space.
It's my psychopathic flesh-eating robot. That's
Thank
right.
you. but no, so...
Are there any horses in it? No, it's set in space. Right.
Is that your Hugh Grant impression, Lou?
No.
Lou.
He's more stammering if it's going to be Hugh Grant.
Yeah, Lou. Sorry, Phil. I did it again. Don't know why. Phil. No, but Jolie's turned it down twice. They've sent an offer to Natalie Portman hot off of Black Swan, which has been screening at the Toronto Film Festival. It's been screening elsewhere. Amazing reviews. Everyone pretty much says she's the front runner for the Best Actress Oscar this year. All power to her. I'm a fan. But that's kind of in doubt because another rumor came out that the studio is actually nudging for Sandra Bullock in that part. It sounds like – I hate to say it, but it sounds like this movie's just going to fall apart. Because they can't agree on a leading actress. And again, I get both both sides. There's Caron saying, I don't want to work with the star. I'll try to make it work with Portman. And the studio saying, we need someone. We're spending a lot of money on this. And we need someone who's going to open the movie. Neither side is wrong. But it sucks because I really wanted to see this goddamn movie.
You will. I'm telling you right now, sir, I think you are going to see it. I think this movie is going to end up exactly like Aronofsky's The Fountain. It's going to derail for the moment, and then it'll come back in a couple of years, and whoever is the big actress of the moment will get behind it. They'll take a pay cut, the movie will be made for maybe a little bit less money, and no one will see it except you and me.
So basically, Rachel Weisz
and Christina. We'll see it, but I don't think. I don't think it's going to make that much money.
In the interim, you can rewatch George Clooney's Solaris.
Yeah,
all that too, actually. Yeah,
and we could watch that.
Mm. Christina, what do you think is going to happen with this? And also, who do you think is going to be? Who's big for you right now? Is there a female actress out there that would get your bum on the seat? I'm really interested to hear your answer on that.
Well, I really like Angelina Jolie. If she was in it, I'd probably go see it. My question is, if they're looking for somebody that's going to open this movie, why did they ask Natalie Portman? What movie is Natalie Portman?
It's because of the reviews because of Black Swan. That's a good point.
But really, what movie has she opened? Viva Vendetta did well not because of her. Star Wars did well not because of her. So really, why? If you want somebody to open your movie, you need to get Sandra Bullock.
All the posters for Thor are just going to be her. I'm telling you right now, she's going to open that movie, and it's going to be huge.
The only thing people care about Thor right now, and I hate to say this, is like the fact those rumors that her and Chris Hemsworth are fuck buddies. That's all they care about at the moment. Real people, because that's the rumor mill, that's all they care about at the moment.
Either that or they have to get Oprah.
Lord Oprah in space. There you go, dude. But she would use her powers to get to Earth immediately. That's so unrealistic, Lou.
The aliens would carve a pathway.
It would be short. Yes, it would.
Sigourney Weaver. How about her?
It's funny. You plan the trajectory of a conversation, how you think it's going to flow and which points we're going to cover, and you guys just fuck it up every time.
Yeah, y'all.
That's us.
I thought it was going to be like a male lead. I thought Robert Downey Jr. was doing this thing.
So did I when when they first announced this, they said Downey, they first announced it, and then they announced it with Jolie. She passed, and they said, "Well, Downey's on board." We all assumed, "Oh, well, they did a rewrite and added a penis." Okay, fair enough. You know, that happened with Salt, and that worked out. No, that's not the case. As Lou said, a supporting role. Thanks, guys.
The girl from the Dragon Tattoo movie.
She's doing Sherlock Holmes 2, sadly. And I say sadly not because I'm looking forward to that sequel, but I was kind of hoping she'd do something else for her first English language movie. Not that.
It's gonna be Gemma Arterton. She's in everything.
She is actually in everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Will she be wearing the Daisy Duke shorts that she did in like that other movie coming up?
Tamara Drew.
Thank you.
I hope so.
I do too. I will do any article with that picture on it, no matter what it's about. It could be about Roger Ebert. I'll put that picture up there.
Actually, if we're on the subject, though, of Quantum of Solace stars, I do prefer Olga Kurylenko. I really – and she's – you know what? I think she's got real potential. She's been in some shit – like those video game movies.
That was Germa. That was Germa, though.
And yes, that's very true. But for some reason, one's getting more exposure than the other, or one's not making the choice.
Well, I don't know. It depends on what you mean by exposure. She's doing Clash of the Titans 2. You're just like, oh, brother.
And possibly the Alien prequel as well.
Even bigger, oh, brother.
Yeah. Jamie just had a W moment there. I say Alien prequel, he just goes, oh, it's God, it's happening.
I don't like the idea of an alien prequel. I don't care if Ridley Scott's behind it or not. It's like, and I don't need to know where the space junkie came from. I have an imagination. Come on, there's something else, Ridley. Like, I know you have like a billion projects on your slate before you die, with all due respect, sir, but this don't need to be one of them.
You sure do, Jamie. You thought Avatar was shit. You've got a real deluded imagination.
Apparently I do, because I have taste, so apparently us with taste.
Let's get on. We'll sell this out the ring, Jamie. You and me.
Shirtless battle.
Oh, I didn't say that.
Excuse me.
Bottomless battle.
Oh, that was Lou. ass blasters, apparently.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, now we do a debate every week. We're kind of done with the news items. This week, we've been talking about this.
Jamie Williams, shitless or not? That's a nice debate.
Does he shit? Yes, he does. Good night, folks. I got witnesses. Okay, so we all go to the movies. I love going to the movies. Like, we bitch about the dickheads with the cell phones and whatnot, but, like, you know, the things that rile us up about going to the movies, and, hey, what's a solution to stop them? I feel like I'm hosting the McLaughlin Group.
You absolutely know, but that's the important thing to say, Jimmy. You know, even though our show is called Movie Moan, and there is nothing to moan about more than our subject tonight, the important thing is we have to try and come up with you and us, because we are, you know, ambassadors for change, practical solutions for these problems. Because it seems like I've heard these debates, like, going back a couple of years, even on, you know, podcasts I listened to, you know, years and years before we did this, and the same problems came up, the same problems that exist today, along with a whole bunch of new ones.
World hunger. Yeah. No, those issues, I'm
nuclear
sorry.
Nuclear disarmament.
Yeah. Oil, you know.
Latest oil spill, right?
Still in the news.
Exactly.
But what about the value-added tax, I say?
Yeah. The green tax.
Is there a labor union? Is there a labor crisis in America today?
That depends on what you mean by crisis.
Why can't England get good dentists?
Yes.
Oh! That's the title of the
trick. Shillings a penny.
Okay.
Don't think I don't know what this is about. You want me to call you cunts again. It's not going to happen.
You do every week. I say, hey, Phil. You're like, hey, cunt. You know, first thing you say to me. You did earlier. No. I mean, Phil, you don't have this problem, though, as much, though, buddy. I mean, like, you have very cordial people. They sit down. They don't make noise, though. They don't, like, cheer and stuff. I don't mind cheering. That's part of the experience.
That depends on the audience. I can say when I've gone to see movies at, like, a rep house, say, the New Beverly,
yeah,
you're in with that audience of people that are going to really enjoy themselves. Now, oddly enough, they don't cheer in every movie I've seen, but for some of the trashier ones, you better believe it, because it's that kind of audience and that kind of movie. So, but yeah,
well,
that's a good
point. See, here's the thing but it's interesting you mention that, because my perspective as a passionate moviegoer is that I'd like to see that kind of audience regularly. I mean, we're so passive, and
that's
so
a double-edged sword, really. It really is.
It is, and I'll can fully admit to that, but. You know, it's interesting that you say you'd like to be with a UK audience where we just shut the fuck up. I like to more like be with an American audience that really get involved.
I'll trade.
Well, let me just say, and I know I keep cutting you off, Phil, but how is it then in the UK where you don't have to deal with small? Is it that the ages are more enforced? Because we don't have the issue. I mean, here we deal with the issue of having small kids in inappropriate movies, and they make noise.
Yeah. They were in Kick-Ass. Yeah, for some reason, someone brought their 6-year-old to Kick-Ass.
There's always that classic thing of, like, some really brutal horror movie, and someone brings their new 2-year-old in to see it. So, yeah. I mean, how is it that does that not do? Just people have more sense in the UK, or do they actually enforce the age requirements in over there? How does that work?
I honestly have never in my life seen a mother with a newborn baby or a toddler or a 2-year-old coming in to a theater, period. Never mind to see an inappropriate movie. So, yeah, my only answer to that can be we're not stupid. It is. Well,
you know, does this go on in Canada also, this sort of thing?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've seen it. Wow. You know, it's a head shaker for sure.
Wow.
What I do find,
what commonality
between
us and Canada? How about that?
There I know.
You're saying that I have it easy over here. Let me just bring up the first.
They don't have
thing.
Butter in their popcorn. God damn it! They don't have it easier.
No,
no, I won't let you butter my raisinets. Damn it!
I knew that was coming. Milk duds. I like milk duds, but we don't get them here.
Milk balls.
Milk duds. I don't like them. I'm sorry. I don't see how people eat
really?
Them. Yes, really.
I never had really candy in the theater, so I wouldn't know.
I've actually been eating Junior Mints the last couple of times for some reason. I look at the popcorn, like, I don't want popcorn. I want Junior Mints. I have no idea what made me want them.
Mike and
I. That's just the way the company likes it. I think, well, let me bring up my first thing that really, really, really really does annoy me, and it's consistent in UK theatres as well as everywhere, I imagine. And it's the simple fact of this. Okay, when the start time is advertised, we know that's the start time for the commercials, which is bad enough, because the start time should be for when the movie starts. But aside from that, the fact is, I will say that because the start time is for the adverts, that still leaves 25 to 30 minutes for all the people who have no perspective of time to show up late and find their seats and, you know, be noisy and shuffle around in their seats. I won't mind because it's the commercials playing. But for the love of God, after that time limit is up and the movie starts and you're still letting people in and it's always an 8 foot tall person sitting in front of me, it really, really bothers me. I think the doors should shut when the movie starts, and it just, that really, really, really bothers me. And I know why they let people in, and this will be consistent among everything
to piss you off
about, I think. Well, yeah, that too, but also
I think it's obvious.
That's right.
The movie theaters, you must agree with me on this, guys, the movie theaters are just terrified of putting it
turning
in place
away.
Anything
absolutely
turning people away or giving them their money back for any reason, and it's, but it's not fair on me. I'm being selfish here. It's not fair on Philly. So
he's going to have to lodge a protest with his MP, I swear to God.
I'm just going to fucking...
Well, I mean, here's the thing. You're going to have... If you have advertisements, which I know that's outside of, say, the Arclight, which only has, say, three trailers, they're never going to broadcast two separate times where the movie, the commercials start and the movie starts.
I wish they did. I wish they did.
Starts. Yeah. That's going to undercut the advertising.
Well, for me, and I can't speak for everyone, I like to sit there during the commercials. I mean, I enjoy that. I mean, granted, they do put too many commercials on, I agree. But it's part of the experience.
But those lovely shampoo ones.
That's what I don't mind. I like the shampoo ones. The build into the movie, but to sit there for commercials? No.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. They do shampoo commercials, Phil? Really?
Yeah. Everything.
Oh, yeah.
Car commercials, cell phone commercials. Milk commercials.
What? Why do you need milk at the theater?
Milk.
Got milk? What?
Got milk. Yeah, they do those commercials for us.
Yeah.
Still?
Do all sort, mainly soda commercials.
Yeah, sodas is all I get.
Soda and Toyotas for some
now,
reason.
Well, I mean, yeah, now kids are in school, so it's always that you see the hipster teenagers, like, taking their pictures and stuff down the hallway. I didn't go to that high school as a kid. I don't know what they're talking about, but I always see that's what we're seeing now in front of our movies. I'm sure next weekend in front of the town we'll be seeing hipster teenager clothes commercials.
Yeah.
That was a relatively recent thing, too. I remember this whole thing started in the mid-90s, and it used to be with just newspaper ads for the local paper in with the commercials, and then it just expanded from there just because they need to make money. So I got to say, at least it's great to see a good perspective, how it is in the other countries,
Yeah, I just have to say, Phil, that the issue that you have with people coming into the theater after the movie starts doesn't happen very often where I am. People come in during the commercials and the trailers, but usually by the time the movie starts, it's pretty well, everybody's got their seat by that time.
Yeah, same here. I don't really get that often.
Yeah, and that's funny, because isn't it the case over in England where you have assigned seating?
Yes.
Isn't that how it is?
What?
I'm so glad Ed brought that up. Not for every showing, but basically with every single theatre now, every screen that I go into, there's the standard seats and there's the premiere seats. If you want allocated seating, if you want your own seat, you pay for the premiere. If it's a free-for-all and you don't care, then you just buy a standard seat. And that's...
Okay.
It's a compromise, but it works. But I'm stunned when I hear from, folks across the pond that this is almost an alien concept to you, the concept
it
of
is.
The time.
It is.
Oh, my God, it is.
It is. Yeah. In the Arclight, you have the ability to get assigned. That's how it works. That's why you end up paying a little bit more. It is assigned seating. When you buy your ticket, you're shown a map of the theater, and you pick your seat. So then you can do what you want and show up literally like 2 minutes before the movie and not have to, hunt and fight for seats.
The only time assigned seating is a factor for us is if you're going to see something in IMAX.
I'm a little surprised there aren't other premium, because that's these theaters appear. There are the other regular theaters that this hasn't appeared anywhere else. But as I said, I mean, this is where you're nearly paying you know, right now, a non-evening show, say what's considered a bargain show, is $12.50 at this theater, which I live next door to.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. I imagine where Jamie lives, it's actually $5.
Yep. So, boom. That's right.
Wow, I guessed correctly. I'm totally
$6.50 here.
Yeah, about $5.
How is it over in Canada? Now, I know we got to deal with the currency conversion here, so.
$6.
Okay, so that translates to 18 American. Okay, so. I'm kidding.
Exactly.
And have currency conversion up as we speak. He's working it all out there.
Well, I mean, you talk about, like, all this sitting and stuff. I mean, how many times is that warranted, though, like, where it's truly packed? I have only been into a couple of movies where it literally is, like, I have to grab a flashlight, you know, the one on my cell phone, just to find a seat. That's not that often. Is it for you guys?
Look, I might sound – maybe I'm being anal about this. I don't give a shit. The fact is, when the movie starts, especially if it's a good movie, something I'm really excited about seeing, and I'm not just talking about epic movies here. I'm talking about, you know, just damn – good movies, you know, I want to be able to be immersed in it from the opening logos in 8-bit, like in Scott Pilgrim, all the way to the end credits, and I don't want to be distracted by somebody coming in. The doors should be shut. I'm not compromising on this.
What's worse, Phil, is what, well, it depends on how your seating is. Like, you know, my local theater, you know, the walk down is in the middle. You'll have some dickhead just stand there in the middle, and I'm like, all right, dude, sit down. No. I don't need you sitting up watching the movie. Sit the fuck down.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But then I go to the multiplexes. It's not like that, you know, the 20-screen cinemaplexes and whatnot. It's not that bad. You know, it's to the side. You walk up or walk in the back, so you don't have to deal with those kind of people. But you still always have to deal with the cell phone dickheads who have to have a little conversation about how their movie sucks or something, or playing a video game, because apparently playing Ms. Pac-Man is more important than finding out whether or not Casey Affleck is going to turn in Morgan Freeman at the end of Gone Baby Gone. That's more important, apparently.
That is amazing that it shows they have a lot of money to waste. That they've spent, you know, possibly well over $20 for this here movie, and that they're still willing to spend time on their cell phone, or they're that ADD addled. So
a lot of it is that. Just, I mean, like, you know, I'm 26, and, you know, I just, you know, I came from an experience like, shut up during the movie. I get pissed off when people talk during the movie.
Yeah, it's
like,
very distracting.
My thing is, yeah, you can play with your cell phone, but the moment the actual trailer starts, even during the commercials, I'm okay with that, but when the trailers start, that's where you should put it away. Christina's telling us a horror story right now. You need to say this out loud. Go ahead, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I was in Charlotte, North Carolina for a wedding the weekend that Troy came out with Brad Pitt and Eric Bana. And mm-hmm. my cousin and a mutual friend of ours really wanted to go see it, so my cousin treated us to go see it. We go in there, and it's the stadium seating, so it's like the seats kind of go up, and the top two rows were filled with, hand to God, gang members. I swear to you, they all had on the same colors and everything, and usually when I go into stadium seating, we go straight to the top. We walked in there, and we saw that, and we said, you know what? The front row is looking pretty good right now. So we sat in the front, and about midway through this movie, I hear this scream let out from the back, and I'm thinking, wow, the surround sound in this theater is really good.
Hey, is that CGI blood? No, it isn't.
Unbelievable.
Blood-o-vision.
And then I hear this commotion start in the back, and I turn around, and I swear to you, a dude got stabbed. He was stumbling down the stairs, and he had, like, blood on the front of his shirt, and all the other dudes in the back just stood up, and they just filed out through the side exit that takes them right out into the street so you don't have to go through the lobby anymore, and this dude just kind of fell over, and everybody ran over to help him, and I looked at my cousin and our friend, and I said, it's time to leave.
To be fair, Christina, the guy said that Orlando Bloom's acting was passable. He was asking for it. I had to give him what was coming to him. I'm sorry, Christina. He was asking for it.
No.
I gotta say, for all the stabbings that go on in the UK, I don't think that ever has that. I don't think that's happened in the theater. I have to admit.
No, I don't think I've seen that one. Particularly of all movies, Troy, of all random flicks. I mean, I would have stabbed someone the moment Eric Bana was killed off. That was the only character I cared about. So, you know, and we got another hour to go, and the only sympathetic character's gone. I'm like, fuck this. That was my reaction. I'm gonna go snap somebody. Fuck this movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the whole other issue altogether about
whether
or not gang violence.
Stabbing?
Well, I'm talking about gang violence.
Should stabbing be justified in a movie theater?
There was a guy in Philly who shot a man, I think, for talking during the movie.
Yeah.
He had it coming, though. You don't know what he was saying, though, Ed. Man, mercy. Anyone else got some horror stories about screenings and stuff?
About gang violence? No, not particularly.
Well, not against the Crips and the Bloods. I just mean like anything in general.
Well, they got droogs over England, so you know how it is.
Droogs. Jesus Christ. Right. Well, no, I mean, we're trying to come up with solutions to this kind of thing. We did bring up kids
bring
before.
Guns.
So our faithful commenter Lighthouse brought up several issues that they had, and so it's only right for Lighthouse that we try and come up with solutions to these things. And the first one that they mentioned was kids in the theatre, aged 12 to 21, who have nothing to do, and parents who bring toddlers. How can this possibly be? What can we do?
The only thing I can think of, this is an alternative idea. It's, you know, I go to church. I don't know if you guys do. I mean, it just putting it out there. We have the pew, and this is at my uncle's church. So, you know, there's the pews and stuff. And in the back, there's an area where they take care of the kids. You can see the preaching, and, you know, but there's like a little changing table and like rocking the kid. That's the only possible scenario I could think of you could do for a movie. That's extra money, though, and that's shit people don't want to have to deal with.
Yeah.
But that's the only scenario I could think of.
There's been talk about, and I know I've heard of this, where some theaters will do like, you know, screenings for, you know, parents, children under 5, and so they'll put them all in one theater. But once again, that's very selective, and most of the time, you know, the little child isn't going to know what's going on.
No.
So. And as for teenagers, I mean, as much as it blows, I mean, these guys have to do something. I just saw Over the Edge. You don't give these kids something to do, they'll burn your cars down. So you gotta. I just saw this, and he put it out there.
If only I'm sure that's what they said at the end of the movie. If only they saw a movie instead.
Well, yeah, if they had built the movie theater in the roller rink, we wouldn't have had this problem, but anyway.
I would have been able to drive home that night.
Yeah, exactly. I know the theater I go to next door is, they have their over 21 screenings, but that gives an excuse for people to drink, which I'm not all that crazy about.
Nah.
And then I remember this theater I used to go to had a rule that said any movie that was rated R, they couldn't allow anyone below the age of 5. Because really...
5? I'm glad they were discreet.
Yeah, I know. They just wouldn't allow it. So I think that... I mean, the thing with teenagers is you're not going to be able to – you're going to have good enforcement. Most theaters aren't going to care about the ratings. But
which brings us on to – well, that brings us on very nicely, Ed, into Lighthouse's second point, which is incompetent staff, or at least staff that don't give a shit. Now, is that the case for you guys, the theaters you go to, are you dealing with competent staff or are you dealing with people who don't give a shit?
People in my theater, I mean, they're nice. I mean, if I say, hey, someone's making noise, they'll go get rid of them or something. But you have to get up during your movie.
Exactly.
I'm wasting.
You have to take the initiative. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's not like you have like a little buzzer or something you can like click on it, you know, and they walk to you like, yes, sir, may I help you? You know, they don't do that stuff like that. That's the problem. You're wasting your time for some dickhole wants to, you know, talk during the movie.
Yep.
Christina, I mean, I take it that... you know, the staff didn't exactly spring into action during that stabbing, but apart from that, what other instances of incompetent staff do you have to deal with?
Well, it depends on which theater I go to here. If I go to the big chain, like here we have the Carmike theaters. If you go to a Carmike theater and somebody's acting up, they're not going to do anything. But we've got this really great indie theater downtown, and if anybody's on their cell phone in there or if anybody's doing anything, they will boot them out automatically. You're out. There's only 2 screening rooms in there, so it makes it easier for people to police as opposed to the Carmite that has like 14 or 15 rooms in there, and there's only so many staff. So I think the smaller the theater it is, the better your experience is going to be.
Multiplex theaters, most of the staff are invisible 99% of the time. You never see them until you're actually leaving the theater. So
well, that's the other benefit is that you can easily sneak in, because I'll admit it, I've snuck into a couple of movies. My friend at Multiplex, they don't notice you're there. My friend of mine, he'll be like, come on, Williams, let's go. they didn't notice. we snuck into Good Shepherd, as a matter of fact. And it was a really good movie, and like the whole time we're like, they're going to find us out. But it was full of old people, so no one really thought, like, why would a bunch of 20-somethings, like, you know, sneak into the Good Shepherd?
That's the thing. You didn't even blend in. You could have been so easily caught.
Damn it. That's right.
I think it's just not expected. You're going to get a lot of fraud about, you know, seeing that movie. So
I'm sure De Niro would have been happy that someone saw it.
So what else has Lighthouse got, Phil?
Yeah.
Lighthouse also has, here it comes. Uh-oh. No 2D screenings for 3D films. Now, we keep selling.
I would just say no 3D films, but that's
there we go. That's why I knew that was
what he said.
Yep.
Right, well, there you go. That's the one sold for you, Lighthouse. Let's
well,
have a look.
It seems weird to have that. I mean, if you're gonna if this is a truly 3D movie, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, but most of these aren't, though.
But most of these are done in post. So what does it matter? You know.
Well, see, the thing
anyone's gonna ask the teller at the box office, like, excuse me, was this shot for 3D? I don't know.
Really.
Yeah, you're not gonna expect the person to be that only at like a rep house, or if somehow they're that highly paid, are you gonna get people to care? I mean, that's, you know, it's understandable. They're not gonna, you know, it's like, well, it's their job. But it's like, well, we've all worked our minimum wage jobs. You can only put in so much. So yeah.
The biggest ripoff of those 3D movies is, you have to pay extra for the movie, and at the end of the movie, you have to get the glasses back. Like, excuse me.
I snuck up. When I saw Avatar, I brought my glasses home. They're still,
what are you gonna
they're
do
still
them?
In my Jeep. I don't care. It's like, I paid that extra $5. God damn it.
That's a freaking rip-off. If
they you're on the dish your glasses
at the end of the movie, why do you have to pay extra for the movie in the first
simmer
place?
Down, Lou. Simmer
is Cameron
down.
Gonna hunt us down and be like, excuse me, you did not return those glasses.
Well, no, this surprised
let
me,
us
but...
keep ours.
Yeah.
Our theater let us keep our glasses. Yeah. The only time I've had to return my glasses is when I saw
it's optional, but if you return them, shouldn't you get, like, a deposit refund or something? Like,
that'd be nice.
Really?
Well,
I'd encourage people to return the glasses.
What you do is you keep your glasses, and then when you go back, you pay for the ticket, and you go in for 3D, and you just bring your own glasses. Problem solved.
Oh, you sneaky little girl.
No, actually, no. But it's the way it works in this country, Lou, is now with 3D screenings. Not for IMAX. For IMAX, they always take the glasses back because they're these ginormous things, you like Elton John glasses that you wouldn't be seen dead in outside. But the real D glasses, yeah, no, it's true.
I think somebody's pulling your leg, Phil.
I've worn them.
I've worn them too. They're huge.
I'll just say that I think for Jamie, it's also he can be that one guy from Back to the Future.
Thank you.
Next Generation.
Thank God.
It'll make him go blind eventually. He looks great. So.
You should see me in those glasses, dude. I put them on and suddenly I'm singing the whole goddamn soundtrack.
Crocodile Rock, baby.
Eldorado. Awesome.
It's either that or it's max headroom. So,
yeah.
But with the real D showings, what they have in place now is a system whereby the first time you pay for your 3D ticket, if you don't have the glasses, you pay the inflated ticket price for a 3D showing. But you keep the glasses, and the next time you're just paying regular price.
Oh, that's awesome. They don't do that here.
That's a lot of keeping up with and stuff. I can't imagine that.
I'd do it.
I would too, but you know,
it's a compromise, dude. I mean, you can't deny. I mean, it's something. It is.
Yes,
I mean,
they're
keeping costs down. It's a way of keeping costs down, and it's a way of stopping excessive waste with all these freaking glasses, which is something I was concerned about initially because you know, we could just keep them with that and, you know, and not bring them back. I've still got a pair. And it was a bit silly. One other thing that I wanted to bring up, but I've friggin' lost my point, so I can't.
Good job, Phil.
I don't know what it is.
Fuck 3D.
He wants more solutions.
I figured out what it is. I remember now. I went to your country. This is linking back to incompetent staff. I went to your country.
When you mean your, or you mean south of the border?
You mean Louisiana? Yeah. Or?
I mean Orlando, Florida. That's where I went.
Yeah.
And I went to see Shrek Forever After with my mum.
In 3D.
Aww.
No, well, see, there's the thing. I don't know if we paid for a 3D screening because my mum paid for it, but we were shown to our seats and we were given glasses by the usherette, and it was a 2D screening. Oh. They gave me money for 2D screening, and my mum was so let down because she's all into the whole thing right now, and I had to break it to her. Like 20 minutes in, it suddenly dawned on us, I don't think it's going to happen.
That's such a dick thing.
Oh no, my God. You know, but here's the thing, though, because, you know, even I will admit, even though I'm not completely averse to 3D, it is nice to watch, you know, it is a nicely animated 3D movie, It's nice to watch it without the tint, you know, the darkened tint that you get when you're watching it with the glasses on. It's nice to watch it in 2D. I appreciated it. And Mum didn't mind, except for the fact that she thinks that she paid a 3D price for a 2D movie. Oh, we got over it.
I would think so, too.
But I wonder if the problem we've got with incompetent staff and with usherettes and also with monitoring, you know, crowds and people with phones and noisy teenagers, it's all a problem due to the fact that, you know, the multiplexes, you know, which are run-of-the-mill 25 screens, just can't be maintained. You know, there's too many screens. You can't have that many staff. You just can't have everybody in... staying for a whole show, if you know what I mean, looking after people, and it's just... the way things are going at the moment, except for, you know, obviously Jamie's little shack theater in the swamp where he usually goes.
Yes.
I
open it up every night, you know.
It's an open door theater, actually. It's out in the swamp. It's out in the bayou.
Yes, we have to watch out for the alligators, but, you know, Swamp Thing is always there to protect us. Fuck you.
Am I right, though? I mean, what do you think about that? Do you think that's what the reason is? It's just the fact that theaters are just too huge these days. They can't be policed. Or do you think that's
Absolutely.
I mean, I can't argue with that, dude.
Yeah.
I just want to throw solution, out a couple of... damn it.
Okay, I've got a couple. I'm just going to throw these out here.
Kill them all. I don't know.
No, well, this is an old fart's perspective, but and you have to be flexible. Obviously, depending on your age group, you know, there's different times that you want to go to the theaters. But, like, for me, like, Friday night, weekends... I don't even bother. I never go to see a movie anymore. I don't want to bother. The crowds are too much. I much prefer matinees on the weekend. If you can go in the morning before noon, is your best chance to see a movie with minimal interruption. Except for family movies, then you have to do a little bit of second thought, because obviously there a lot of people are going to bring their kids to those movies in the morning. But if it's a family movie and it's a kid movie and you don't really have to concentrate that much, that's not really a big deal. I take my son to those kinds of movies, and kids are going to be talking, and it actually adds to the atmosphere, because it's you know, if you're watching a DreamWorks movie or something like that, it's not so bad. With a Pixar movie, I kind of like to be in a little, you know, in a time zone that's where the little kids aren't going to be there as much, but that's hard to do. But by and large, I avoid Friday nights, Saturday, Sunday nights. I try to go in the morning on matinees. If you can do it, you know, obviously with work schedules and that, it's not easy to do. But if you can do matinees Monday through Thursday at any time, it's totally awesome. A lot of times it's like you and maybe four other people, which might be kind of creepy. You might find that kind of creepy, I don't know, because it is a communal experience. But
I don't mind. I've done that. But when I was at university, I did that also. I would go to the first screening because, like, you would find it with cheaper rates and less, not as many people. So it was surprising to see certain movies. Like, I saw Jarhead the day it opened on the first screening. It's packed with guys my age. I was shocked. I was
I'm telling you, like, if you can work it a matinee, like on a Saturday or a Sunday morning, before noon, it is awesome. The theaters are, it's quiet. You walk in, you get your stuff. There's no lineups. For anybody that's, you know, getting fed up with the atmosphere during the, what I consider like the prime time, anything after 7 o'clock Friday nights, just don't go during those times. Like, and obviously, if you're younger and you're dating, and it's, you know, that's a big part of your social structure, it's much harder to do. But if you get past that, I'm telling you, if you can get in the matinees, you can't beat it. They're awesome. It's quiet. You don't have any of those problems that people are constantly complaining about. And I love it.
So you're saying basically I need to get married before I can solve my problems going to the theater. Well, that's fine. I'll work on that.
Yeah, well,
that's what I was going to suggest.
That's why I said it depends on your. It's you know, it's age group dependent.
You can marry me, Phil.
Yeah.
Find a girl that likes movies, and then you'll both be going to matinees together. Have the whole theater yourself. How romantic!
That's true.
Raindrops keep falling. I'm sorry. Anyway, But actually, what Lou brings up is something that's a problem, not with the theatres, but with me, I'm afraid to say, is the fact that I can't have it both ways. Lou's absolutely right. I want to see, you know, big, exciting movies in, you know, the optimum time to see it with a great crowd and enjoy it on the Friday night or the Saturday night. But, you know, I obviously want all the benefits of having it in non, you know, like a Sunday morning screenings where, you know, people are respectful, and I just can't have it both ways, which is my fault.
Well, you talk about, like, having a big crowd. Have you guys ever been with a movie with a big crowd where they actually were great, where they weren't? I mean, like, I remember seeing Dark Knight was a great crowd.
Like you said, there are certain movies that everybody, because it cuts across all the age groups, so everybody's invested in seeing, like, everybody wanted to see The Dark Knight. So if you went to see The Dark Knight, you could go see that anytime you wanted. But everything else is like, it's you know, it's iffy because there's different levels of interest in seeing this movie. Some people
Star
are just
Trek.
Doing it to kill time.
I saw Star Trek at the 7, they had the 7 p.m. screenings on Thursday night. I took my old man because it was his birthday, and my mother went, I brought her too, and it was only a few people there. And of course, I went later that weekend on Sunday, and like the word had caught on how great the movie was, but there was a... It was an old fat guy dressed up like Captain Kirk in our screening.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. But he was friendly.
I was going to say it was Shatner.
He was like eating on his popcorn the whole time in disgust. Like, he's not Captain Kirk.
But I'm glad you mentioned that, Jamie. I'm glad you mentioned it, because I remember when we first reviewed Star Trek, I mentioned that. I said I went to see it on a Saturday, peak time, IMAX crowd, so we're talking, you know, and it's absolutely packed, and there were definitely some people in there who would have been restless and rowdy.
Because
I saw them, and I was like, I know you're going to cause trouble, but all of a sudden, and, you know, the opening logos, and they're going, yeah, Star Trek, I can't wait to move with this. Oh, Jim!
Yeah, holy, and you remember, you told me, it was an IMAX screening, and a young girl who worked there went up and said, and live long, and she said it wrong. Remember you told me that?
Yeah, she introduced the movie, and she said, live free and prosper.
And they kind of, her assholes next to you said, that's not right.
Say it right. You just embarrassed yourself, love. That's what they said.
Love.
Right next to me. Literally love. Right next to me.
And they still and those guys still haven't kissed a girl, by the way.
No, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
But I'll never forget, like, I did the Lord of the Rings trilogy Tuesday or whatever it was. I saw all three movies.
Oh, yeah.
Saw the first two movies, the extended cuts, and then Return of the King. And that was just obviously everybody in that theater was totally into it. So there was not any, you know, there was no interruptions, no distractions. And that's one of the days of my life that I'll never forget. When you're with a like-minded group of people and you're watching something that everybody's into, it's totally awesome.
And The Passion was another weird one for me, where, like, no one talked during the movie because it was a church that had bought out the theater, except for about three or four tickets that yours truly bought when he found out they were doing that. They clapped at the end of the movie. And I was like, it's a good movie. I don't know if I'd clap it. I don't clap at the end of movies. That's just not my thing. I don't do that. So it was weird to have like a bunch of people clap at the end of The Passion. I was like,
I guess Phil will never be inviting you over.
When I went to see Toy Story 3 in IMAX, all the adults stood up and gave that movie a standing ovation at the end.
Oh, that's awesome. Awesome.
As they should. They should.
Well, yeah, that's. I agree with that. Just, I don't do it myself. I'm like,
They were all stoned during day and night, but when the movie was over, they all applauded, yes.
Yeah. I want to know how many of them pulled out hankies, though, during the last 5 minutes.
Oh, the tears were flowing like crazy in that movie. Everybody was sobbing.
Well, all throughout the movie, probably.
Oh, yeah. I went and saw that with my friend and his kids turned and looked at us. They were like, why are you guys crying?
You'll find out when you grow up.
That's right. It's kind of like a reverse up. You cry during the first 10 minutes.
Because we have souls, you fucking mistake. Like, when you appreciate cinema.
Oh, it's because we have experience.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what. So I mean, Phil. I mean, you know, we talked about this class a couple times. Phil, you know, he got teary-eyed at the dog. I got teary-eyed, you know, when they first try to call Andy and their ill-fated attempt to talk to him. Like, that got to me. I mean, just little things like that.
No, I'm telling you, dude. The furnace when they're all holding hands.
Oh God!
Oh my God! I'm gonna cry right now just talking about it.
And by the way, Jamie, you know, I know you don't know this, but that scene is so intense in IMAX. You wouldn't believe it.
What, the hell scene?
You feel like you're gonna burn. You feel like you're going to burn. It's really, really effective.
Oh, I would have thought everybody was crying when Jesse was handing the toys over to the little girl. That's
sweet. Oh, you mean not
Jesse.
Sorry.
Andy. No, they did. I mean, like, they did that too, but like the point is everyone talks about the last, you know, 5 minutes, but it's a lot of moments during that movie. It's not just that. It's a couple of, you know, and you know, as
yeah,
we just
like when
out.
The dog shows up, like you said, and when the soldiers leave, and yeah.
I didn't really tear up when the soldiers left. I was like, what are they doing?
I actually did a little bit.
Harley Herbery, where are you going?
When
really?
The military bugs out, you know things are not good.
No.
Hey, analogy there, Pixar.
I want to tell one more story, guys, and I think I've told this story before, but maybe some of you haven't heard it, I don't know. Lord of the Rings, as Lewis mentioned, it was very special for me because I saw Lord of the Rings, every single one of them, on their opening Wednesday, opening night with a sold-out crowd, but with a very specific set of friends from university. I was at university at the time, and I saw them with a very specific band of friends every single time. Weird thing was, you know, we weren't roommates, and we didn't have the same classes. We only saw each other, you know, a couple of times, really, during the year, but we all got together for those movies, you know, every single year as an annual event. And, you know, we were just praying that, you know, they would be, that the audience
they
would be.
Suck.
I had no doubt about that, but that the audience would be respectful because, you know, 3-hour movie, if the audience is going to be rowdy, that's a long haul. And
it
just want to be engrossed in it. And I tell you, it really was like a religious experience. I don't know how else to put it. The first one was, you know, just a great night out because we weren't really, you know, into it at that point. It was the first movie. We were just, you know, they were just introducing everything, but we had a great time. The second one was really where it started to get really, really special. And I've said this many times, the last 30 minutes of The Two Towers is one of the most just amazing tour de forces of cinema that I've ever seen. The way the set pieces just build and build and build on top of each other, and everybody was just completely into it. In fact, we were all in sync. It's like we were all, like the bit, yeah, I'm sure you all know this bit, the bit where the guy, the mad bomber, comes with the flaming torch and he's going to blow up the wall and like to try and shoot him before he gets there, and we're all going, and we were all leaning, I'm not shitting you, we were all leaning forward, and then the wall blows, and we all sat back, and it was amazing. And then the Ents show up to kick the shit out of Isengard. At that point, there's no words left, and we're all just sitting there. Most
when they started that music, and then the Ents start or come out of from where the woods are to where they're, it's all been taken away.
It's likely we go to our deaths, but and I forget the rest.
Wow,
I'm getting goosebumps just thinking.
Thank
you. Job there, those were great movies to see in the audience, though. I mean, like, I can think of, like, seeing the Fellowship of the Ring, and, you know, it came out on a Wednesday, but I saw it on a Friday night, packed. There were people who didn't really understand this was three movies. Or if they did, they thought maybe it'd be like a Star Wars thing where it ends on a high note and the second one would be dark. And I heard people go, oh, my God! You know, because it got dark at the end of that.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, people walked out just like, oh, man. But then a year later, those same people were at Fellowship of the Ring, I mean, at Two Towers, you know, cheering at the end. Because, I mean, the second one kind of gives you, ends on a higher note all throughout.
Yeah.
It is funny. That is, like, more of a crowd pleaser is Two Towers, actually. I mean, they're all crowd pleasers.
And, like, when you have a movie like that, like, with a story that's strong, then all the issues about bad theater behavior doesn't happen because everybody's into it. Like with the Dark Knight, with this, I mean, for Return of the King, the high moment, oddly enough, was Théoden when he rallied the troops before they did the battle, the charge at the Fields of Pelennor. Like that was everybody in that theater, you could just tell.
Well, the story.
Shit, this is fucking awesome. And that was like when they started that charge. Oh. That is a moment that I'll never forget.
Well, also like the moment where Sam tells a story about, you know, the way things used to be. The tales that really matter cut to the aftermath of that battle. Like, just, that was, like, something to watch. And granted,
I've got to say, though, Lou, the bit that topped that, maybe your audience didn't react the same way, but mine did, when it, you know, the Pelennor Fields, when everything looks like it's going to shit, then Aragorn gets out the boat with the ghosts.
Yeah, yeah, I like that moment people... too. But then when all the ghosts came out, it was kind of like scrub and clean. It was kind of like, I don't know.
One fat guy cheered when he jumped out.
Yeah, that was
that look.
Yeah. Everybody was screaming. They screamed in my screamed when he jumped off the boat. And when, oh God, what's her name? When Eowyn whips off her little helmet and she says,
I'm not a man.
Boom.
Yeah, boom. Yeah. Yeah.
At the end of Return of the King,
our audience just said, no one said you were. That's what we did. That's all.
Zing. I just remember, like, you know, there were, like, I was seeing Return of the King for the second time, maybe a few days after it opened. And I remember there were some, like, not even teenagers, because I was a teenager still. Some younger, like early teen girls were there, and they were all whispering at the end when we see Aragorn as the king, and we see what's her name? God, Arwen, and like they kind of go like, "Kiss her, kiss her." So I was like, "He's going to
shut up."
Yeah, exactly. But it's just like I remember what stuck me that experience, and I'll shut up. Is when I saw Return of the King, you know, the night it opened, and I remember I ran to all my old friends from high school because we had just graduated only maybe 6 months prior in May, so here we are in December, and you know, what are you doing? And I'm going to school, blah blah blah. It was really weird to see a lot of people there at that screening, you know, the first screening of the night. Just, you know, that's what always sticks out to my mind about seeing Return of the King.
Yeah. Absolutely. Now, Christina, Christina was just typing a story there. Christina, let me ask you a question. If I've never actually seen you, so if we were at the opening night of Return of the King together and I saw you, would I mistake you for Viggo Mortensen?
No.
Dude, Viggo's crying.
No. I have brown hair, and I didn't have enough time to make an Arwen outfit, so they said, just go as Aragorn. I said, okay, because I already had the little necklace. So they said, just go as Aragorn. I said, all right. So... I wanted
Did you have a beard, though?
No.
I was just wondering. I don't know how all out you went for it.
No. I had the outfit, but I didn't have an actual beard. I'm not that hardcore.
Sounds cool.
But you could have just kept your makeup on and stuff and then, like, you know, looked your, you know, I'm sure, attractive self, and you could have said, oh, I'm Stuart Townsend as Aragorn. I'm going girly.
No. Yeah. My friends, like, we showed up at the theater and they just like grabbed like a little handful of dirt and they just smudged it all over my face. And said, yeah, there you go. And everyone was like, oh, look, it's Aragorn with boobs.
Yeah.
Good times.
Yeah, we're not going to have that kind of experience again, though. That's the thing. I can't think of the next time we're going to have an experience of that kind.
I'll tell you when it's Deathly Hallows Part 2. If it works, we're all good.
One.
That's a good point, actually, Phil. You are very accurate, because that next summer, that's going to be the movie of next year. That's going to make $1 billion. If it doesn't...
it'll make $2 billion.
I don't know about that, but...
Well, two of them together, but...
Oh, okay. I thought you meant it's Part 2. No, but, I mean, that's the movie of next year.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, it's over. That's a series of films, and it will have been 10 years when it hit. Well, not technically, but still. You know, it's weird. Like, you know, we'll never get another one of those again.
No. Unfortunately, I'm a little too old for the whole Harry Potter thing. I can enjoy them, but I can't get that invested in them as obviously you younger folks can. But, yeah, when those movies come out, like Lord of the Rings, or for me, before that, it was like the original Star Wars. People knew there was something special was going on. I saw that in the theater when it first came out.
That must have been great.
That was unbelievable because, well, it's hard to describe because science fiction shows were so static before that, like any sort of action shots. So to like to have swooping camera shots and things like that in that movie. Superman, you know, was kind of the same thing, but that was a lot of it was a John Williams score. Just kind of like holy.
Well, also the like, first two.
Yeah, the first two. Like he just wrote the score that will ever be for define that character. You know,
which so makes me wonder if they'll use that in the reboot in Christmas. Two years from now. I wonder if they'll use that again.
Yeah. So and those things can't be manufactured. So like the Lord of the Rings thing, and like next year with the Harry Potter thing. Those are things that you really have to treasure and appreciate when they happen because they don't come along very often.
But they do come along. I mean, I really don't subscribe to this theory because I'm an optimist that there's nothing that's going to equal my experience of seeing Lord of the Rings together. It was certainly the most special experience I've ever had going to the movies, seeing those that trilogy together. Maybe it won't happen, but I remain eternally optimistic because, of course, those types of movies, you don't see them coming. It's not going to be.
And those are the best ones. Like, you know, but often you might miss them. Like Shawshank Redemption, nobody saw that in the theater, but...
Nope. You but
know,
everyone loves
or
it.
Or the first rock, you know, like, that's like, wow, yeah, you know, like, it's
I tell
the
you
one
what,
that you don't
though,
expect the one that hate the best.
I tell you what, though, there's still time to plan this. I reckon I should fly over to Louisiana, and me and Jamie should see the rebooted Superman together.
We
and
should.
If it works, and
we'll
if
hold.
It's awesome, I'm going to take my clothes off.
Oh.
And I'm just going to run around, run up on the roof, and get told to... come down by the police, but I'm gonna be so happy. This conversation kind of dovetailed off, folks. But really, the point we are trying to make
is that Phil's a nudist.
Yeah, that's true. But the real point, which is sad to say, is exactly what Lou said. The fact is, if really, really great crowd pleasing movies come out that just get the audience's attention, then for the most part, yeah, our problems do go away and we just get wrapped up in it. And that's why we keep going back to the movies. And that's really the only solution, unfortunately. I'm lucky that most of the time with other movies, with smaller movies, you know, the crowds that cause the problems, they're not interested in seeing them. Like, I know Jamie doesn't like it, but I really had a special time watching Gran Torino because I watched honestly,
I love that movie.
Yeah, I know. We love it. We love it, Lou.
I love to hear Clint Eastwood sing at the end of his own movie, Gran Torino.
If that's all you got out of that movie, then you need to rewatch it.
No, you know what I got out of the movie is yet another example where the critics just, you know, like take off Clint Eastwood's pants and just blow him dry because he's Clint Eastwood. There are some terrible
movies. Back to the positive.
No. Someone brought this up. That is a terrible movie. Like, his two World War II movies are great. Like, Million Dollar Baby is great. Not Gran Torino.
Well, you know, that's why I got excited at the beginning of the show about The Dark Tower, because if the first movie does well, then you're going to get the same kind of fan anticipation for the next installment like you got with Harry Potter and the Lord of the Rings movies. Because I'm telling you, if you think Samwise Gamgee is an awesome character, wait until you meet Jake, because that 10-year-old kid will just break your heart.
Well, on that note... I guess we'll call it a day. What do you guys think?
Yeah. We're,
all right.
We went over an hour, I think.
We had a good discussion, though. I think we'll try. I don't know. I'll think of something for next week. Ed, if you haven't,
Ed left. Yeah, that's
yeah. If you haven't noticed, Ed had to leave, so he'll be back next week as per usual. He told us before the record, I'll be here an hour, and we're at about the 82-minute mark. So obviously, he had to skedaddle. but you know. Folks, thanks for listening. It's always fun to have you give us comments, criticism, suggestions. We'll certainly take them to heart.
Shorter shows.
But we're on topic, though. There's not much news going on, so we have time to talk about...
Imagine if we had real news. Wow.
If we did. Yeah, we will. It's just that time. It's the, you know, it's the dead zone. I was going to do a bad impression, but I can't. But anyway...
Christina, once again, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us, because I didn't want to do this particular discussion without you. We kept it on cue waiting for you, and it's really been worth it, because, heck, we've not been witness to a stabbing, so it was.
No.
I'm so glad that you did join us tonight, so thank you for putting up with my bullshit, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I love talking to you guys.
Yeah, come on anytime. There's always the open – the door is always open for you to come in anytime.
It's always an extra chair.
There you go. Right. Exactly. Folks, thanks for listening. Have a great week at the movies. Take care. And the balcony is closed.
Yep.
Long days and pleasant nights.
If your head should fall.